Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
It's our Monday morning health checkup, and today it's Dr. Irfan Hafiz, Chief Medical Officer, Northwest Region, Northwestern Medicine. Doctor, good morning. Let's talk first about the new recommendations from the CDC for the COVID vaccine. And this is anyone 65 or older, also immunocompromised people, right?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, these new recommendations for this winter season does recommend those groups that you mentioned, the over 65 and immunocompromised, to get two doses, not just the one, 6 months apart.
Okay, and this is supposed to be very effective towards the new strain or whatever strain is out there now?
Yeah, it's the KP2 variant that is really being targeted. It is felt that because of the change in that variant, that especially those groups may be at higher risk for complications or long COVID. We've talked about that on your program before, and that can be debilitating as well. So it's really trying to minimize those effects.
Got it. Coming off a big sports weekend with football and the World Series, this is a timely report that came out about the threat to public health from gambling. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this was an interesting article, really, that's looking at, you know, online betting and the popularity that it's gained recently, really across the world it has, and what are the public health implications around that is what we're looking at. And there's some growing concerns because it's just become that much easier to participate in online gambling than it was. It's not like getting together with friends, you know, on a Saturday night or something.
Mm-hmm. And so what specifics did this report mention, or was it specific in any way?
Well, it's really looking at some of the overall detriments. There's not just the financial losses, but the effects that it can have on relationships. Even things like suicidality, domestic violence have been reported with that as well. So really, it's kind of looking at, you know, the downstream implications of some of that possibility there that can be seen more and more. So it's really being aware of that.
Speaking of sports, Miami's quarterback came back from a concussion on Sunday. And there is an interesting study about depression and concussions. What did this study find?
Yeah, this one was pretty interesting, where they looked at both depression and concussion. They looked at the effects of one on the other. And in this particular study, it did look like there was an association. If you have a concussion, you have a higher likelihood of depression, higher difficulty of improving from depression, and vice versa as well. That concussions can make can show more symptoms as well there. It was a small study, only about 10 men and 25 female athletes that were involved in it, but there were some findings. So more studies is still needed in that area.
Do you have parents come to you with the question about whether they should allow their kids to participate in football at a young age?
From time to time, yes.
What do you tell them?
I said, understand the risks there. I mean, definitely need to have protection, but even with that, it's very hard, even with that. So understanding the risks there.
It seems like every week now there's a new bit of research about exercise that has to do with exercising in short bursts. What's the word on this now?
Yeah, so this was a study that was really looking at, so a really small study, it was out of Italy, only about 10 participants, and looked at really short intervals. We're talking only about a few minutes at a time, 10 seconds to maybe 2 to 3 minutes of bursts of activity and what the effect that had on the body. And in that really small study, I don't want to underemphasize that, they did see some metabolic benefits of that. So it does look like, you know, this starting and stopping of the exercise does have some positive effect on the body as well. And that goes along with high interval training as opposed to trying to keep exercise at a constant level. So there seems to be some benefit of that. The 10-second piece needs more research, though. Mm-hmm.
I do welcome any study that's going to tell me that if I exercise at a good pace for just a couple of minutes, it's just as good or maybe better than a half hour or more. I like that.
Exactly.
But I guess the takeaway, or one of the takeaways from this, could be that you go out for your daily walk and maybe vary the pace a little bit, right?
It is, and therefore, even varying the pace with doing a walk, climbing stairs, you know, try to make it a little quicker, getting that little burst of energy, even that kind of stress on the body can go a long way.
Continuing our Monday morning health checkup with Dr. Irfan Hafiz from Northwestern Medicine, let's talk about mammograms. And next time a woman goes in for a mammogram, she might be asked, would you like the radiologist to examine this for a heart disease risk? Explain this, doctor.
Yeah, so heart disease is really about calcification of the arteries around the heart that supply that. But when you do have calcification, you can have calcification in other arteries too. So in this case, when somebody gets a mammogram, you may incidentally see some calcification there. So it's an interesting thing that's probably more of an incidental finding. But in this one paper, they did mention that there are some places that actually do charge extra for that analysis.
So the pictures may show some artery blockage. Is that what?
Or hardening. It's more hardening of the arteries. You see a little bit of buildup on those arteries in the breast tissue. So that could indicate that there could be calcification buildup in the heart arteries as well.
And will this type of screening become routine, do you think?
I think it's really too early to say. I'm a little bit hesitant right now. I think we needed a lot more information. I think if we do see calcifications on a mammogram, I think it's certainly something we should tell the patient and have the patient seek further workup. By no means is it a conclusive. But just because you don't have any calcifications, it does not mean that there is nothing in the heart either. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think there's a little bit on both sides there. So I think that information needs to be interpreted with caution.
Sounds like it. Also, in women's health news this morning, there's some new guidelines for preventing strokes that spell out for the first time the risks faced by women. Tell us about this.
Yeah, and this is really, it's a really timely study that, you know, we're starting to look at this, where till now a lot of the stroke risk factors were not gender specific. They were the same, you know, for both men and women, diabetes, hypertension, and so on there. But now in this study, they're really starting to look at risk factors that are specific to women, such as endometriosis, preterm births, early menopause, and these are all linked to estrogen and the amount of hormones that are there, which we know do have increased risk of strokes, blood clotting, and so on. And that's where women in pregnancy can get blood clots in the leg. They can get stirs, increased risk of strokes as well. So really incorporating that overall does help give a bigger picture.
Now then, let's get to the latest information on the problems with those of us who have a sweet tooth. And it seems like sugar, you know, this is the new smoking. What have we learned? What have we learned now, doctor?
Yeah, really about free sugars or additive sugars into products definitely are not really good for your health. I mean, when you have natural sugars that are already in, say, fruits or vegetables, those are processed a little bit differently versus sugars that are added. Those tend to spike your blood sugars, and the body doesn't seem to handle those very well. And people who do tend to consume large quantities, that's more than 25 grams of those sugars a day, certainly are at higher risk for our health issues.
And the big question, of course, how do you kick a sweet tooth, and how long does it take to do that? How do you start?
Yeah, it's hard, but I think one of the ways is really starting to monitor how much sugar intake you have. There are some great tracking tools that are available online, and having to put a little bit of a conscious effort in there and starting to put some limitations. There are some lifestyle changes and how we, you know, eat foods and making sure we have enough fiber in our diet and starting to replace those simple sugars with more complex sugars in our diet is really the process.
Yeah. How do you fool the body into thinking you have the satisfaction of sugar? I guess that's the project. Okay, but on the other hand now, for the health-conscious folks who don't have this problem, there's some good news in this new research, isn't there?
Yeah, it is. I mean, there again, it does support the overall health and the benefit that they do have, especially those who have higher protein diets and have a limited amount of these simple sugars in their diet. They do see that there is better cardiovascular health that's there. And that's something we've seen in a couple of other studies, and that does seem to be contributing to that. Less inflammation in the body as well, and this, again, goes a long way in preventing strokes and cardiovascular health as well.
All right, I'll try to be good today. Thank you. Dr. Irfan Hafiz, Chief Medical Officer, Northwest Region, Northwestern Medicine. Thank you, Doctor. Have a good week.
Thank you.